Warning, the following content is experimental and may be considered too aggressive, abrasive, and contrarian for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
What's good, everybody? This is Abstract Dynasty, the show where we use stats, theory, and experience to challenge consensus, unearth value, and hone our craft as Dynasty players. I'm AJ, and it's about to get weird, y'all. Because I have emerged from the darkest doldrums of fantasy circles to bear witness to the Forbidden Open in drafts. As a little bit of housekeeping, if you enjoy, don't forget to like and share the show. Follow us at Abstract Dynasty on Twitter. Hit up the comments, hit up the reviews for topics, questions, draft and trade advice, all that good stuff. So without further ado, let's talk shop. So for those of you who got your permission slip signed by your parent or guardian, welcome in. I promise this is about Dynasty, but real quick, I want to bring up something that has been brought to my attention in a different fantasy format. So let's set the scene. This is an underdog fantasy draft, meaning it's a best ball league. This is a 12-person league, and it's the standard underdog settings. So one quarterback league, two running backs, three wide receivers, one tight end, one flex, half PPR. So the draft kicks off, going pretty much business as usual. You got five or six running backs, wide receiver here and there, Travis Kelce. Second round, more of the same. A few more running backs, a few more wide receivers than the previous round. Darren Waller. Pretty normal, right? And then you go to check the rosters and you see that both Travis Kelce and Darren Waller went to the same guy. I'm going to read that format to you again. One tight end, one flex. Half PPR. And someone just took two of the top three or four tight ends in the game. No, it wasn't an auto draft. No, it wasn't a misclick. This was deliberate. Opening a best ball draft going tight end, tight end. What? Was my knee-jerk reaction, but only for a minute. I started to think this strat through. So if you're going to open with tight end, tight end, Kelce and Waller are pretty damn good players, which doesn't sound all that terrible because then you just hammer running back and wide receiver for the rest of the draft with a quarterback sprinkled in there here and there. So the way I see this playing out, it does two things. Number one, it establishes a baseline out of your flex spot. So Travis Kelce and Darren Waller together average about 16 points per game between them in half PPR. For those of you unfamiliar with best ball, you draft your team, but there's no lineup setting. There's no add or drop on waivers. There's no trades. It's just the app autofills your absolute best lineup every single week. So by virtue of roster format, whichever of the two tight ends is going to score more points on a given week gets put into the tight end slot. And then that quote unquote losing tight end will contend with every other player on your bench for who scores the most points out of your flex spot. And theoretically, your flex spot won't score below 16 points on a given week because these two tight ends' target volume is so high, they have really high upside, but they can be outscored by another flex. So on a bad week, if your roster really just shits the bed, more often than not, you're going to have a stable floor coming from one of these guys in your flex. And on a good week, if somebody on your bench blows up, honestly, that's a good thing because you're getting more points than you would have from one of those tight ends. But those tight ends still have the same blow-up potential that the rest of your dart throws on your bench have. So the other thing that this does is it creates a shortage at a position that's already very shallow. If you played fantasy for longer than a minute, you know that there just aren't that many good tight ends. So by taking Kelce and Waller, you are leaving the opponents to fight over the last of George Kittle and Kyle Pitts. Beyond that, there's the mid-tier tight ends that have their blemishes and then the late rounds. So not only is your team taking a tight end advantage, but you're also taking a second team's potential tight end advantage, at least theoretically. So anybody out there still thinking that, you know, taking two tight ends at the top of the round is just a dead pick because you can't start them all, it's just not true. That's not the way best ball format works. So underdog, you get 18 total picks for your roster, and we've just used two of them. So the other 16 picks are used to fill out the rest of this roster, which the format aids kind of well, to be honest, because number one, this is a one quarterback league. So you probably only need two slots minimum on a quarterback. Quarterbacks are very replaceable in one QB leagues. And you can basically find them anywhere from the second, third round for Patrick Mahomes all the way to last pick and finding like a Derek Carr, like if you absolutely have to. So there is very little pressure to take quarterback as long as you can fill out a decent scoring roster for a 17-game season. Now you can take one quarterback if you're a psycho and just take a take a zero on 1 week, but I would prefer two. So then the last 14 picks you use as a platoon approach between the two running backs and three wide receiver slots. And you can set this up between a five running back to nine wide receiver ratio, 6-8, or an even 7-7, basically whatever you'd prefer. And when you're looking at where these slots are, how they fall in the draft, that 3-5 round range, you're still within grasp of the mid-tier running back targets that we're targeting in best ball and dynasty and redraft, like Joe Mixon, Miles Gaskin, rookies Travis Etienne and Javonte Williams, Chris Carson. Even James Robinson's been getting some value correction as of late. So you're already flipping what we're doing on its head by not going running back first, by not taking elite wide receivers first. But if you're looking at any of those running backs I just named and saying, well, this is stupid, why the hell would I pass up? Those guys aren't as good as Christian McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley, Dalvin Cook. Yeah, but remember that there's ebbs and flows to weekly scoring in fantasy. If you just take a random look at the finishes from 2020 for the running backs, random week here. Let's go week 4 of the 2020 season. Top scoring running backs in half PPR were Joe Mixon, Dalvin Cook, Melvin Gordon, Chris Carson, Latavius Murray. Let's go another random week. 9. Top 5, Dalvin Cook, Christian McCaffrey, James Robinson, Kalen Ballage, Jerick McKinnon. Weird. How about the fantasy championship? Week 16. Top 5 was Alvin Kamara, Miles Gaskin, Samaje Perine, David Johnson, and Jeff Wilson Jr. Only one of those guys in week 16 was being drafted anywhere near the first round. The rest of these guys were basically throwaways. So just conceptualize that when we're drafting running backs high, we're not drafting them because they're just flat out better. That's part of why we draft them there, and that's part of why they score higher. But in terms of weekly consistency, regular unexciting running backs can sneak into top scorers at any time. So just because you don't have an Alvin Kamara anchoring your very first pick of the draft doesn't mean that a platoon approach of Javonte Williams, Chris Carson, somebody super late I'm looking at is like Nyheim Hines, doesn't mean you can't be a top scoring team on any given week. So that's running back covered. And as far as wide receiver is concerned, wide receiver is the deepest position in fantasy. You have your elites at the top, but in basically every fantasy format, they get pushed down by whatever scoring that you play, whether it's super flex leagues with two quarterbacks or tight end premium leagues, and running backs are king in just about every one of those anyway. So there really isn't a ton of pressure to find wide receivers. You're not going to be left with nothing if you don't take the absolute top guys. The last thing that this strategy does is that it's much harder for your opponents to match your tight end output with Travis Kelce and Darren Waller without increasing the number of tight ends they have to draft. Because if your opponent is one of the teams that missed out on George Kittle or Kyle Pitts, you're left shooting for those mid-tier tight end, often prove that they're not worth the ADP that they're going at. And the dart throws are cheap, but they don't have a lot of consistency. So you need to draft more tight ends and stretch that ratio to match the amount of tight end scoring that they're pretty much just going to lay up week after week. So is this some level of 200 IQ genius? I don't know. Probably not. I mean, for example, there's opportunity cost to consider. You can't do this from the 101 of a draft because you're absolutely leaving value on the board. Straight up, I love Travis Kelce and I love Darren Waller, but I wouldn't take them over most of the running backs in the first round, especially in a best ball league. I mean, points are points and so much more opportunity on average for a running back because they funnel both parts of the offense, run and pass, through one player. So your floor is going to be higher, your ceiling is going to be higher. And for that, running backs are just stupid important in every league, which we already know. And not to mention, if we're just talking about creating baselines, drafting a stud anywhere else in your lineup, whether it's running back, quarterback, or wide receiver, effectively does the same thing for the baseline at that respective position. So I wouldn't expect everybody to go run and do this strat immediately like it's cheating the system, but it's neat. I wanted to share it because I'm a fucking nerd like that. Really what this got me thinking about is how we value tight ends. The fact that this strategy could work in theory because of format, It got me thinking about the rest of the way that we format tight ends in most of our leagues. Just about any forum you go to, you start talking about tight end value. That phrase is almost synonymous with the phrase positional advantage. When is positional advantage worth it for tight ends? On its face, because of the way we play fantasy and because of the way the NFL landscape is, owning an elite tight end is a zero-sum game. There's only about four elite tight ends right now, and that's if Kyle Pitts becomes what we are expecting him to be. Pretty good shot, but still a question mark, hasn't taken a snap yet. So if we were to split each one of those tight ends up evenly so that no team is stacking more than one, that's only four players in a 12-team league that can have, quote, positional advantage. Well, that's important. You know, you want to be good as you can at every position. And I will say, in a broad sense, the smaller your league is, the more that studs matter, because in a 10 or an 8-team league, if you play those, everybody's team is pretty good. Everybody's team has depth, floor, ceiling, everything. So to have the best players with the highest ceiling does matter more in a game like that. What always kills me is when people start to play with format and start to make deals based on positional advantage with zero context. Because if you've ever looked at the end of season rankings for tight ends, so this year, George Kittle ended up getting hurt, missed about half the season, so he didn't finish inside the top three. Kelce and Waller dominated 1-2. Number three, Robert Tonyan, Green Bay tight end for Aaron Rodgers, was a really big beneficiary in the red zone. He scored about 75 points fewer on the entire season than Darren Waller did. And both of them played 16 games. Kelce played 15, and he scored 110 more points than Robert Tonyan. So clearly there's a tier break here. He only had 52 receptions on 59 targets. Very efficient, but 11 touchdowns. And one of those games was a 3-touchdown game. These are the kind of tight ends that you look for when you don't end up with one of the top three, because you're just accepting that you're not going to have that weekly target floor that's going to consistently finish you inside the top three. And then you just take darts later in the draft. TJ Hockenson was a similar story this year, scored a little bit less than Robert Tonyan, but was tight end four. And Mark Andrews, a mainstay mid-tier tight end, scored almost the same amount. Right after him was Logan Thomas, Mike Gesicki. All of these guys kind of pool in between 130 and 150 points. The main difference being Mark Andrews was a fifth to sixth round pick this year, while Tonyan, Hockenson, and Logan Thomas were all double digits or later. That's where positional value bites you in the ass. Sure, your Travis Kelce outscored my Robert Tonyan by 110 points, but instead of me chasing tight ends down the rabbit hole at that same range, I drafted Stephon Diggs or Chris Godwin or a rookie running back. Meanwhile, my Robert Tonyan and his measly 150 points that only cost me an 11th round pick is probably far and away outscoring your 11th round pick that you didn't use on a tight end. Isn't that positional advantage too? So the fact that positional advantage is a zero-sum game on its face, by having an elite, you don't not have one, it doesn't always mean a whole lot at the end of the year, because you're able to stream tight ends for the best matchups. You could take all of those tight ends you've streamed in a year and Frankenstein them into one essentially top five tight end. So when we're talking about positional advantage, it's all about context. We'll go back to full PPR because that's where I'm most comfortable. So Kelce topped the tight ends this year at 20.9 points per game. Stack him up against the rest of the receivers that finished this year, that's within 1 point per game of both Tyreek Hill and Stephon Diggs, the wide receiver one and wide receiver three. Darren Waller was a small step down, 17.4 points per game, but on par with DeAndre Hopkins, Calvin Ridley, Justin Jefferson, and DK Metcalf. George Kittle only played in 8 games, but his points per game in the games that he did play was 15.6. on par with Tyler Lockett, Allen Robinson, Julio Jones, and Chris Godwin. So you're starting to see the step down here, even though these guys, on average, finish 1-2-3. And Travis Kelce specifically, as good as he's been, in 2019, he was down a full 5 points per game. He was still a big contender on fantasy championships, but he wasn't the crazy league winner that he showed up to be this year. But where people start to ratchet up tight end values with tight end premium, where you get an extra PPR bonus on top of the regular reception bonus every player gets. And you can get real crazy with this. I've seen a full additional PPR on a tight end when the regular receivers and running backs only catch 0.5. I've seen 1.75 points. I've seen 2 full points. It gets nuts. And regular tight end premium is 1.5. And it ratchets the points per game of Kelce, Waller, and Kittle up to 24.4, 20.8, and 18.6 respectively. Kelce at 24 is in that stratosphere with Alvin Kamara and Devontae Adams, true dominant league winners that carried fantasy championship teams. So when you start fudging with scoring, obviously, yeah, they're going to be more valuable. But what is a tight end? Tight ends are mid to low wide receiver ones. That's what they are. They're wide receivers. But we've been sucked into this positional value narrative when ultimately the points aren't actually adding up to a major difference unless you're playing tight end premium, which again, you're only collecting that bonus consistently on the 4 target hogs, which are the elite tight ends. So unless you're playing tight end premium, going out and acquiring an elite tight end at the cost of an elite wide receiver is a lateral move at best. The only way you should be going to get one is if you are a true contender and it's the finishing piece. I know Kyle Pitts' hype is at an all-time high right now. Kelce's coming off a career year. George Kittle be coming back from injury. But remember that George Kittle, on average, scored as many points as Tyler Lockett did. And Tyler Lockett's, in terms of dynasty value, is a low wide receiver 2 at best for a competing team. And Darren Waller's 17.4 points per game, he's going off the board before DeAndre Hopkins consistently, and they're both the same age. He's going after Justin Jefferson and DK Metcalf because of their elite performances already, but somebody like Calvin Ridley, who's now the clear number one in the Atlanta offense, is often going behind Darren Waller and is 2 years younger. They are wide receivers. I know that if you lack the elite tight end, that damn tight end slot in your starting roster just sits there and mocks you because you don't have someone to put in there that you feel excellent about. The reality is you're better off finding some reception upside dudes as like a pseudo elite, like what I think TJ Hawkinson's going to be this year, or just punting in general. And this includes tight end premium leagues. The reason the elite tight ends are what they are is because they are athletes. They are speed receiving tight ends with route running chops that can challenge wide receivers for targets. I don't want to talk about Mark Andrews anymore. I don't want to talk about Mike Gesicki. I don't want to talk about Logan Thomas or Noah Fant, or any of the other hopeful tight ends that have finished top 12 in the last 2-3 years. They're not going to be on the target share that the elites are. They're just not. Doesn't mean they can't finish as top tight ends, but that scoring has to come in other ways. It's got to be in touchdowns. It's got to be on long breakaway plays. And this is kind of why I'm not that huge a fan of tight end premium, at least in its pure form. You can absolutely execute this in a regular dynasty startup. In a tight end premium league, you can take Kelce Waller or Waller Pitts or Kittle Pitts. And there's a good shot it still adds up to positional advantage over your opponent. To illustrate this, imagine if you will, instead of playing with tight end slots in our starting roster, we played fantasy with a spot specifically for slot wide receivers. And let's say we're playing full PPR. And slot receivers gain an extra half point per reception, or a slot receiver premium. Now, you can start any wide receiver you want in this slot spot, but the only way that your wide receiver can collect on that extra half point premium is if your wide receiver takes 60% of their targets from the slot. That's already a very small crop as it is, because in 2020, only 6 such wide receivers took that many snaps from the slot. Rescore the 2020 end of season rankings with that slot premium. CeeDee Lamb and Cooper Kupp tie for wide receiver 10. Curtis Samuel and Cole Beasley finish as wide receiver 12 and 14 respectively. Tyler Boyd comes in at wide receiver 17. And in the feel-good story of the 2020 season, Juju Smith-Schuster shoots back up to elite status wide receiver 5. Adam Thielen, Mike Evans, AJ Brown, and Keenan Allen all fall out of the top 12 wide receivers. And sure, you've got the Devontae Adams, the Stephon Diggs, the Calvin Ridley finishing ahead of them still, but none of them are eligible in this slot. Because you're a slot receiver, because you take that many snaps from the slot, you're afforded a bonus that the majority of the rest of the players in the player pool just can't attain, even though in actuality, perimeter and slot receivers are basically doing the same job. That's what we're doing with tight ends right now. Except it's arguably more extreme an advantage for tight ends because in this hypothetical example, you still have both a ton of depth at the wide receiver position as well as wide receivers that can score comparable to the slot wide receivers without being eligible. We don't have that at the tight end position. There just aren't enough tight ends that have a high enough reception floor to rival the big four. Isn't that kind of bullshit? It makes everyone think that all tight ends are always more valuable all the time than they otherwise would, which is sometimes true. TJ Hockenson had great breakout season, but he only had 700 yards and 6 touchdowns. Where he made his hay was in receptions. He was a low average depth of target, kind of check down. He was used creatively and somewhat in the red zone, but he was best in providing stable floor for your team, which in a tight end landscape like we have can be league winning. So I guess the problem with tight end premium isn't even the premium. It's just that we play with tight ends. If you want like the absolute best way to balance the tight end position, I guess it would be tight end premium or no tight end premium, doesn't matter. But playing fantasy without a designated tight end slot, just make that an extra flex so that teams can draft Kelce, Waller, Kittle, and Kyle Pitts and still reap the value that they provide to your team, but everybody else in the league isn't forced to start an inferior tight end, which creates a positional disadvantage. It sounds counterintuitive, but at least until we get a better, more well-rounded group of fantasy tight ends in the NFL. So in closing, just remember what tight ends are. Tight ends are receivers. The best ones are as good as the best wide receivers. The mid-tier tight ends are somewhat of a wide receiver too, but can be inconsistent at times. So if you're sitting on the board in a draft and you're saying, oh, I should probably take a tight end because it's tight end premium, don't. If the top three are gone, just don't. You need to believe that somebody like TJ Hockenson or Dallas Goedert is going to reap the benefit of that tight end premium reception bonus. And if they're not going to, just move on. Make your team better elsewhere. Don't get sucked into positional advantage because the format tells you that they're more valuable. Thank you for listening. And until next time, I'm out. Keep grinding.